Hello, and welcome to the Other 23 Hours podcast, where health and fitness meet real life. We discuss maximizing your results in the gym by mastering your lifestyle outside of it. We know that the hour in the gym is the easy part. It's the other 23 hours of the day. That's the real challenge. Now, here's your girl, mindset mentor, and the Oprah of fitness, Cassandra DeLynn.
Well, hello, and welcome to the Other 23 Hours podcast. My name is Cassandra DeLynn, and I am your host. And I'm so excited about today's show. You guys are going to fall in love. I know it. I just know it. I'm happy to introduce you to someone who is I'm a genuine fan of this woman. I'm happy to introduce to you guys Dr. Trina Wiggins. Dr. Trina has a phenomenal career that she'll share with you in a little bit. But recently, she has taken her 32 years of practicing medicine and wellness and put it together in the perfect, literally the perfect guide for women or people in general to become healthy and fit. And it's called KISS, K-I-S-S, Keep It Short and Simple for a Healthy, Sustainable Lifestyle. And she delivers on that, you guys. And so I was so thrilled when I learned about this. I reached out to her to see if she'd be open to coming on the show, and she is. And so she's here, and she's going to talk to you guys a little bit about herself and the book. And we're just going to have a great conversation today about health and wellness. She's one of the women I think, you know, we could probably talk all day about health and wellness. So welcome, Dr. Trina. I am, again, so, so glad to have you. Super duper excited.
Yes, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Good, good. I'm so glad. And so I wanted to just get you guys should know also in full disclosure. So I actually know Dr. Trina on somewhat of a personal level. She is the sister of another phenomenal woman. I believe I've talked to you guys a little bit about a friend of mine, my life coach, a mentor. Tamara Steele is someone who I've known as a friend. She's been a client. Lots of different types of relationships. And I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I went to one of her retreats. She has these annual women's retreats that I've spoken at a couple of them. And it was there that I met her sister, our guest today, Dr. Trina. And when you meet Dr. Trina, she's petite, but she's powerful. She has an energy that literally kind of like oozes out of her pores. And I remember just kind of being awestruck in looking at her energy, her physique. And then, of course, she's spoken at these retreats, and she is just full of so much information and knowledge. And what I love the most, though, really tangible, like digestible ways to live a healthy lifestyle. We make it out to be such a big thing, and it really doesn't have to be. So anyways, I know Dr. Trina, I'm a genuine fan. So I just wanted you guys to know that about us as well. So I've talked a lot. I was hoping you could start with this interview with kind of how you start the book. You've got a really interesting and heartfelt reason as to why you got into health and fitness. And I'm hoping you can share a little bit about that.
Absolutely. So my journey on health, wellness, nutrition dates back to 1974. And it was in 1974 that my father was unfortunately diagnosed with a terminal illness. And that was at the age of 34. And they gave him just a few months to live. But fortunately, he did live an additional 4 years. But what was really interesting during that 4 year time period, my mom was relentless in using food as medicine to try to help bolster my dad's immune system. She would use vegetables, fruits. I mean, we even grew wheatgrass in our backyard. And she purchased a wheatgrass juicer. Now, mind you, this was back in the 70s. And so she was very forward thinking, you know, or ahead of her time, I should say. So my dad ended up passing away in 1978, 4 years later. But I really learned a lot from what my mom was doing. She planted the seeds of health and wellness in me at an early age. Now, fast forward 2 years after that, while in high school, I had the opportunity to shadow a physician, and I shadowed a neurosurgeon. And that was very exciting. I got to shadow him. I even got to watch brain surgery. So that piqued my interest even more about possibly going into medicine or wellness or health. Now, fast forward 2 years after that, I'm a student at Stanford. I'm a pre-med student, and I have this wonderful pre-med advisor by the name of Dr. Woodrow Myers, who just happens to be running for the governor of the state of Indiana right now. He was instrumental in being a mentor, planting the seeds of health and wellness, showing me how to navigate being a pre-med, helping me with recommendations and how to take certain classes to make your resume better. So he was very instrumental. And he taught me one thing that I will always remember. He says, Trina, you must learn, earn, and return. So what does that really mean? When we're young adults, high school students, we're in the process of learning. When we get to middle-aged, we're earning a living. And when you reach my age, a more mature age, it's all about returning. What can I give back to my community? What can I give back to society? So right now, I work at Volunteers in Medicine of Southern Nevada, where I provide healthcare for children who've been falling between the cracks or parents have come over some hard times. And it's a pleasure. So I do work with Volunteers in Medicine of Southern Nevada. So that's really how I got started in the health and wellness industry, so to speak. Now, as far as the fitness goes, that dates back to 1972. It was the summer of 72, and I was lacing my tennis shoes up downstairs, getting ready to go play kickball with all my kids on the block, and something caught the corner of my eye that would, you know, like I said, I was mesmerized. It would change my life really forever. I looked up and I saw Olga Korbut, the Russian gymnast, doing a no-hand backflip on the balance beam. I had never seen anything like that. And I was just like, mom, come down here and watch Olga. She's like, who is Olga? So she runs down and we watch Olga and we watch the rest of the gymnastics on the Olympics. And right after that, I'm in the phone book. I got to find a gymnastics facility. And I was like looking and couldn't find anything in Oakland. So I said, mom, take me to the library. So I went to the library, checked out like 12 to 13 phone books, because, you know, Oakland has a lot of surrounding cities, and decided to do my search. And lo and behold, I found Diablo Gymnastics Club in Walnut Creek, California. Couldn't wait to get started. Started there, moved up the ladder rather quickly from class 3, class 2 to class 1, because I started late. I was 11. And that's, you know, that's kind of late for a gymnast. So started there and moved up quickly and just loved the sport. If I could do it 7 days a week, I would. So anyway, after I got to be a class 1 gymnast, that's one step below from being an elite gymnast. And to be, and once you're an elite gymnast, you have the chance to try out for the Olympics. So what I started noticing was just some unfair judging practices. I'll never forget a tournament, or not a tournament, but a competition I went to in Phoenix in the early 70s. And you know what your score is. Everyone knows their score after the end of the competition. You can do your own tally. And I had come in December, the judges calling an emergency meeting. And lo and behold, I dropped to fifth place. And, you know, that started happening more frequently. And that's just very discouraging because that's something I don't have control over. Very subjective. So I decided to take a break my senior year in high school. But what was so nice, when I arrived at Stanford, I said, oh my God, they got a women's gymnastics team. So I made it a point to go visit the coach and tried out for the team, made the team, and received a scholarship. So I was just ecstatic again to restart or revitalize my gymnastics career. But unfortunately, 2 years later, I sustained an ACL injury, and, you know, they're more common in women given the way our bodies are structured. So I had to make a decision. Am I going to try to rehab and come back, or am I going to focus all my energies on medical school? And I made the difficult decision to focus all my energies on medical school. But then I had another hurdle to overcome. Once I got to medical school, internship, residency, how was I going to manipulate everything so I can get it all in? Because we know medical school, internship, and residency, they're very demanding, very time consuming. How was I going to work out and maintain my fitness and not let my career sabotage my health? So that became, you know, I was like focused on that. So what I really did in the first, in medical school, I bought myself a stationary bike. And in the morning before class, I would ride my bike and read over my notes. So that was a simple behavior that I instituted just so I can make sure that I was not neglecting my health and fitness. And then fast forward, once I had the twins, that became another challenge. Because with, as you know, with kids, it's not, you know, it's not a job. I mean, a job, you know, comes to an end, but with children, that's 24/7. So I said, what can I do once again to not let having kids sabotage my health? So I remember when they were really young, I had my stationary bike still. I would put the bike next to my bed, put one twin in his carrier. And I always pump my breast milk. So I put that milk in a bottle, fed him, rode the bike, and breastfed the other child. I know that sounds crazy, but it really worked well for me because I was burning calories two ways, riding the bike and breastfeeding. So that was a kind of fun story. And then when I got a little older and it became more mobile, I built a wrought iron fence around the living room area, because I tried those ones that you buy at the stores and that just wasn't doing the trick. So I put a wrought iron fence around my living room. It had a little gate door and I would exercise right in front of that gate. But within that area, they had books, a jungle, a little jungle gym, games. I had a TV with plexiglass so they couldn't touch anything. So they were in a safe, you know, environment, but it also allowed me to work out and not be worried about them getting injured or where are they. And then they saw me. So that alleviated some of their stress because I was still within their eyesight. So that's what I did pretty much through internship, residency, and when the boys were younger. And then one last story I want to share. So 31 years after the Olga realization, or you know, that I was really mesmerized and wanting to do gymnastics. It was the age of 42. And Tamara, my sister, was here in Vegas looking for a wedding venue. And we're at the Rio All Suites Resort waiting for the wedding planner. And she was running late. So we're just sitting there. And all of a sudden, Tamara looked up and saw on the big marquee, Miss Fitness USA. And I was like, what is that? Well, since the lady was running late, we said, let's go check it out. We go check it out. And lo and behold, I'm seeing women doing like gymnastics routines. They also had to do a speech with an evening gown and a swimsuit. So I was like, oh my God, this looks great. So at that moment, Tamara challenged me. She said, I challenge you to do these fitness competitions. So I kind of hemmed and hummed for a couple years. And then I finally started doing the competitions. And so it's been 17 years, 50 shows later, and I'm still doing the fitness. So that's kind of my story to how I got to where I am today.
So amazing. You know, 50 shows, but I'm sure you're not done yet, right?
You know, I still compete. And the nice thing about it, since there's been this pandemic, I've expanded my horizon. So I may enter a acro dance show, the Senior Olympics, and there's a Seniors Got Talent. I just uploaded my most recent video yesterday. So I still do my thing. And like I said, it gives me pleasure and it gives me an additional purpose. You know, obviously we all have purpose wanting to stay healthy and fit, but I love to entertain. I'm like, what better way to have a secondary purpose and to inspire others to become fit or to pursue their passion?
It's like God had a recipe when he was creating you. You know, there's the fitness, there's the beauty, there's the intellect, there's the showmanship. I mean, and poof, there's Dr. Trina Wiggins. it's an amazing story. And I forgot, you touched on so many things that I forgot during the introduction, that you are a mother to the most two handsome young men I've ever seen, Stanford grads themselves, basketball stars. And I can imagine when they were little, being your little fit kids, they probably, you know, were no match against the standard little, you know, kid pin type setups that were around, you know, back in the day. So I believe you. I believe, yeah. I mean, they're your children, for goodness sake. They're going to be little powerhouses. And, you know, as you mentioned that Tamara challenged you to the competitions, I'm sitting here smiling and nodding because I'm like, yep, that sounds like Tamara. She's going to challenge you to be your best self. And look at you here today, you know, as a result of all of that. So amazing. I mean, you guys definitely have something in your genes, because I was going to mention that brought up your mother and who she became to your father, and then obviously to you guys as he was going through his health issues. And I've met your mother. I've spoken with your mother, and she is another incredible woman. I mean, I don't know what's in your DNA, but you guys need to figure out how to package that, because as a family, you're a stunning family, and you guys are doing a lot right and amazing. And I'm glad you're sharing, you know, how all of this stuff came to be. And it's funny, you mentioned two things that some people might have no idea what those are, because, well, I guess they do exist, but aren't very popular these days, which is the library and Yellow Pages. You know, these days when people want to get fit, they just hit Google, and it's literally at our fingertips, and they're able to access information. And I just think if people had to go through the steps that you went through in order to find and get their hands on something, you know, just not many people would do that. But I wanted to ask you, because you had mentioned about finding a way to stay active while you were in medical school and during your residency. And, you know, one of my beliefs and philosophies is that being active and staying healthy is part of what makes you successful in some of those business or educational endeavors. Me personally, you know, I have a lot going on at work. And when that happens, as opposed to saying, oh, I don't have time, in my mind, I say, in order to be effective and good and show up powerfully in whatever it is I need to do professionally, I absolutely have to carve out this time for the physical piece. And I'm just wondering, you know, you juggled a lot. So do you feel that you finding that time helped equip you or enable you in order to manage all of these multiple competing priorities?
Yes. You know, to me, obviously we all have priorities, but I think you have to carve out a segment of time to get those things done that are necessary. To me, fitness and health are number one. Then everything else really, you know, then it comes, you know, obviously family, children. But if I'm not my personal best, how can I help my family, my husband, my children? So, and for me to be my personal best, that requires my mental, physical, spiritual, all has to be addressed. And I typically like to start with that the first thing when I wake up in the morning.
Yeah. And I was going to say, one of the things I want to talk a little bit about the book, because again, I, as a busy working woman myself, and I enjoy reading, I'm a book nerd, but I do find it challenging sometimes to always find the time to sit down and read. And so when I saw your book and learned about your book, and you promise on the cover here, kiss, kiss, keep it short and simple, I'm like, okay, you know, let's see what she has. But you really deliver on that promise. And it's such a nice, succinct way that you put it in terms of the physical piece and then the nutrition piece and then the mindset piece and some of your tips and some of the tips you have and suggestions on how to maintain balance and all of this. And again, I just found it very well written and to the point. It really hit the nail on the head. But my question is, you talk about incorporating fitness, but you do so a couple of ways. One, in small doses throughout the day, which I think is a concept no one talks about, not particularly, you know, our doctors, right? I'm not hearing this advice often from physicians. So I would love for you to expand on the different ways people can introduce small doses. But then you also talk about something that is literally NEAT, a neat idea, but the acronym NEAT, love that. And I remember at one of the retreats I seen you at or spoke with you at, you had talked about that and how you exercise on the plane. you know? And so anyways, I just think you have two really kind of novel and unspoken about methods for incorporating fitness into a busy lifestyle. And I was hoping you could share a little bit more about those two ideas.
Oh, absolutely. So NEAT stands for non-exercise activity thermogenesis. You know, we live in a chaotic, busy world. And say I'm going to save my workout after an 8 or 9 hour day at work and go somewhere, fight for a park, get into the gym, no equipment that you want that's available, that can be a deterrent. So we have to find ways to work it into modern society's way of life. And what I like the prescription 10 to 20 minutes, 3 times a day. And studies have shown that even 10 minutes, short burst of 10 minutes of exercise is as effective as one long session. Now, back when I, in the 80s, when I was in medical school, it was not mainstream. I think it was referenced in the literature first back in 1985. So nowadays, you don't need to be as stubborn and you don't need fancy gym or fancy equipment. All you need is yourself, maybe your phone and a chair. Because I love the 7-minute app. When I travel or when I go anywhere, that's something I can just jump right into. So that incorporates 12 exercises that you do, and they're separated by 10 seconds. So you get 30 seconds to do it, 10-second rest, 30 seconds for the next one, 10-minute rest. That incorporates aerobic activity and strengthening exercises. So you're, I mean, you're killing two birds with one stone. So I love that. And it is the number one app in over 100 countries, and primarily because it's short and simple. Other things I like to do, I like to incorporate calisthenics into your favorite wedding songs, like the Casper Slide, the Cupid Shuffle, the Wobble, the Electric Slide. And so like when the song says, how low can you go? I'm on the floor doing push-ups or tricep dips. When it says one hop this time, I'm doing jumping jacks. So if you incorporate calisthenics, you're going to not only have strength in there, but you're going to increase your heart rate or the intensity level as well. And if you have stairs, you're golden. Because in my book, I talk about a little stair exercise you can do that's easy. I mean, that's probably the most underrated, underutilized piece of equipment people have in their homes. So if people can get used to using their stairs, that's another way to incorporate it into your day. And I think it's easier for people to wrap their mind around doing short bursts of activity because of small digestible pieces interwoven throughout your day. And what it does, you can see light at the end of the tunnel. And I think for most people, by seeing light at the end of the tunnel and seeing the finish line, you have a tendency, oh, I'm going to work harder. I'm almost there. As opposed to if you know you have an hour session, you may have a tendency to pace yourself and not go all out. So I think it's a great way to incorporate exercise throughout your day, and it's cumulative. It adds up at the end of the day. And as far as NEAT activities, I'm always incorporating NEAT. So when you're walking, increase your stride length. Make it a wider stride. If you're waiting in line, maybe do some discrete toe raises. If you're going to the grocery store, obviously park further away so you can get more steps and carry the basket. Don't push a cart. And obviously, when you're given the option of the stairs, elevator, escalator, take the stairs. And remember, every stair you climb, you burn 0.1 calories. So, you know, or even sitting in traffic, you can do shoulder rolls. It, the whole point of it is being in a constant state of motion. Our bodies were meant to move. And I also have heard studies that show that if you compare two people, one person who just sedentary all day, but goes to the gym like clockwork and puts in 30 to 40 minutes and calls it a day, versus the next person who also puts in that 30 minutes, but is constantly moving and not sedentary, they have a better fitness and health profile than that person who's sedentary, who just did that one activity for the day. So it's important to be in a constant state of motion because we're meant to move.
No, I couldn't agree more. And I love how in the book, you literally spell everything out. I mean, it's like, here's my workouts. Here's what you do to this song, or here's what you can do to that song, or here's what I do on the stairs. I mean, it literally is laid out for you, almost paint by numbers, step by step, to see exactly what it is that you do. And then you actually also include a chart here that kind of goes over the NEAT. And I was so excited. I was like, ooh, I wonder, you know, what do I do? Like, what are some of the things that I can look towards? And some of the, I would say, not high calorie burning, but not low calorie burning, moderate calorie burning activities I engage in every single day are in here. So you talk about, or I'm sorry, it lists cooking food or preparing food with some walking. In 15 minutes, I burned 26 calories. Well, I cook almost 3 meals a day. So that was great to learn. Watering plants. I have, I don't know, like 2 dozen plants in my house, maybe. So I'm watering plants, 15 minutes, 26 calories. I'm like, score, sitting, playing with animals, light activity. And I'm pretty sure I go a little bit more than light. I might be moderate. But again, 26 calories for playing with my puppy and my cats. And I'm like, score. I never thought about these things. Even doing laundry, putting away clothes, 22 calories in 15 minutes. And I'm like, yo, this is awesome to know. I had no idea. And it is, it's encouraging. It's motivating to think that these regular things that I'm doing every single day are a chore. Yes, sometimes, but they're contributing towards my health.
Absolutely. And then you can always bump it up a notch. I know there were, I can't remember the actual study, but they looked at housekeeping. And when they found out how many calories they were burning by doing various activities, they increased their intensity because they were motivated.
Yeah.
So you can even, you can take it to the next level. Say if you're vacuuming or you're putting away laundry, maybe put some half pound weights on. So there's so many things you can play around with just by looking at those NEAT activities.
Yeah, no, I'm so glad you incorporated that. And I have to take my laundry up and downstairs. So I know that throws in a few extra, you know, calories there. But, you know, one of the things I would like for you to, I guess, somehow address is, I mean, let me also just say, you have some of the most amazing pictures in this book. Some of these I'm like, my goodness, you're putting, you know, I don't know why you're competing in senior anything. You could put a lot of these younger women to shame, but people can look at you and have a hard time maybe accepting or believing that what we just described, 10 to 20 minutes, 3 times a day, or the NEAT exercises, some people might struggle with believing that what you just talked about equals this incredible, you know, physique I'm looking at in the book. How would you address people who might have some skepticism or doubt about the process you've just described?
Yeah, you know what? I think the key thing that differentiates me back in the day from being stubborn, you know, trying not to let my, you know, trying not to have my career sabotage my health. Back then, I didn't know about these short bursts of activity. I just figured 20 minutes, that was just my own calculation in my head. But if you know that you can improve your health, and it's been shown cardiovascular profile improving with 7 to 10 minutes, I mean, to me, that's motivating right there. And the key thing is being consistently consistent. One of the problems I see with people is that we are consistently inconsistent, and your body needs to be consistent in order to really show, how should I put, here's another way of putting it. If you're consistently consistent, your body will continue to burn calories even when you're sitting or sleeping, but you got to prove to it that you're consistently consistent. So, and other part of the equation is nutrition. Nutrition plays a huge role in getting results. And we know a lot of more about nutrition than we did 20 or 30 years ago. So I think it's balancing act. I think people will be more motivated and inspired to do the short burst because you can wrap your mind around it. You can see the finish line. Like when you're watching a 400 meter race, you see, I mean, or you're watching any type of Olympic track and field. When they're coming to the end, they're giving it all they got, because they know it's coming to an end, right? So it's just, it's no different. So I think if people can get into the mindset following the prescription of small digestive pieces throughout the day and address their, what are they eating? Address their nutritional. Are they getting enough fruits and vegetables and whole grain that has a lot of fiber in it that's going to help them maintain and manage their weight? What does that look like?
Yeah. So I was just going to say, you segue perfectly into what I wanted to talk about next, because nutrition, you go in here and you give so much good stuff as it pertains to nutrition. So I did want to talk about this. A couple of things. One, I absolutely love the information about the hidden sugars and hidden salt, sodium, in almost every processed food. I like you, and as you recommend in the book, is try to eat clean or eat non-processed foods. And people don't understand why I won't eat, you know, canned vegetables, for example. And you have that highlighted in the book, you know, about canned spinach and how much hidden sodium is in there. Because the processing of foods matters, one, and you go into great explanation as to why. But then two, it is these processed foods do have these hidden ingredients, and they're not called sodium and sugar all the time. And they're not called salt and sugar all the time. They're called other things, which again, you highlight in the book. But I was just hoping you could share a little bit about, you know, educating people on these hidden kind of sabotagers of our diets, because people can go buy, for example, a Lean Cuisine or another diet prepackaged meal and think that they're doing something good for themselves. They're proud of themselves. They're taking those steps, but it's really not helping them because of some of the things you talk about. So can you touch on that a little bit?
Absolutely. So as a segue into that, the ex-FDA commissioner, he was a pediatrician, and Dr. Kessler, the pediatrician, and he could not understand why he was not losing weight, but he would exercise all the time and he couldn't understand that. So, but what he was doing, he was traveling a lot by being head of the FDA, and he had to eat out at these restaurants like your Macaroni Grills, your Olive Garden, your PF Chang's. Okay. So he had to eat at those restaurants. So he said, maybe it's the food I'm eating. So what he started doing was called dumpster diving. So when these restaurants closed, he would go in the back of the restaurant outside and pull out the different type of foods they were feeding people. And what he found was they were loaded with salt, sugar, and fat, making us addicted, wanting more and more of it. I mean, you remember the commercial, I bet you can't eat just one Lay's potato chip?
Yep.
Well, that's basically one of the reasons why. So these foods are highly addicting, keeping us coming back, but they're causing a lot of harm and damage. So let's start with sodium. Ideally, we should get anywhere between 1500 milligrams and 2300 milligrams of sodium per day max. Okay. And the problem with sodium is a magnet to water. So if you eat sodium and sodium is in your bloodstream, water is going to rush right in there with it. And so what you're going to have is increased volume of fluid with inside your blood vessel. That increased volume puts increased pressure on the blood vessel wall, damaging it, causing it to be less flexible, stiffer, right? More stiff. It causes it to narrow. So that is one of the ways, the mechanism, it can lead to hypertension. You have a less flexible and narrow tube. So when you figure fluid or blood is trying to go through it, it's more challenging. And so the heart has to pump harder and harder to pump out the blood, which has oxygen and nutrients, is trying to deliver to the different organs in the body. So now that you're eating all this sodium, so let me tell you, at some of these restaurants, my kids did a project. It was at Macaroni Grill. And I'm not for sure. I think it was the chicken masala, but don't quote me on that. This has been when they were in high school. I just remember the amount of sodium was 4,600 milligrams for that one meal. Now, remember, you're not supposed to exceed 2,300. And if you are African-American, have another chronic disease, or over 50, they want you to stay around 1,500. So now look at this. You haven't even had breakfast added into that lunch or any of those salty snacks you may indulge in.
Mm-hmm.
So just, I mean, that in itself. And people get it twisted thinking that their salt comes from the salt shaker. That is not correct. The majority of salt comes from restaurants and prepackaged foods. So when you go to the grocery store and you buy prepackaged food, more than likely it's going to have salt in there because salt prevents spoilage. So that way it can sit on the shelf for 3 weeks to 4 weeks without spoiling. So the bottom line is we're in a capitalist society. It's all about the money. If they can save dollars, they have no interest in your health. And I'm just calling a spade, because if we didn't have the preservatives in there, they will spoil a lot sooner.
I am so glad you just said I'm over here waving my hands in the air. Like, I'm so glad you just said everything that you said and that you specifically called out some of those restaurants that people think are harmless. It's just higher priced fast food. The Macaroni Grill and the California Pizza Kitchen and the Elephant Bar are just more expensive McDonald's.
Exactly. And you really have to be a savvy consumer. And so say, for example, I have to go to dinner with a colleague or somebody for work, and I don't have a choice in the restaurant. You better believe I'm online that night, seeing what's my best option. And if I don't see one, I'll call the restaurant and talk to a waiter and say, can you speak to the chef? You got to do your due diligence. Because sometimes, you know, if I have the choice in the restaurant, then I'm going to make the decision. I'm going to look at my Happy Cow app and find out plant-based restaurants that are concerned about my well-being.
Yep.
And I'll choose that first. But if I don't have a say-so, I'm doing my homework the night before.
Have you seen that movie, When Harry Met Sally?
That's been a while ago. So
I asked because Sally in the movie is the most specific orderer in the world. She'll sit down at a restaurant and say, I want this, but this on the side and just this many ounces of that. And that has always, that inspired me once I knew you could order like that. And I always tell people, when you go to a restaurant, they might give you your options, but you can tell the server what you want and apologize. And I have gone and apologized in advance. I'm sorry. I'm about to be really specific. I know you offer a 6 ounce steak, but all I want is 4. And I want these potatoes and I want, you know, this vegetable with no additional, you know, whatever, no butter or whatever the case may be, but you can order that specific and it's okay. Like, it's okay.
Absolutely. It's okay.
Yeah.
And people just need to make sure they just ask those questions and don't be embarrassed. This is your health we're talking about, right?
Right.
And I get so perturbed when I see people buying a car, looking at the specs and looking at the add-ons, and then only look at what's in their food. I'm like, a car is replaceable. You only have one body.
I feel you on that. And I'm so glad you also touched on the fact that we are in a capitalist society, and I hate going into conspiracy theories because people think I'm doing too much. But I mean, you get me when I say that the food that's on the shelves is not actually food. They're items, they're ingredients that are disguised as food, but they're lab created just to make us want more. It's 100% about that return customer, and that they actually have lab studies to make sure they perfect the crunch on that chip so that you do come back, and they perfect the taste of that ranch so you find it irresistible. They are creating a habit. They're creating an addiction by design.
Right.
So that you continue to consume it. It has nothing to do with your well-being, even if it says fat-free, low-carb, high-fat, whatever. All of those things are disguising the addiction they're creating. And I don't know. It's just mind-boggling to me that, like you said, there's a lack of trust. And, you know, you go buy a car, you inspect the hell out of it, but we completely trust everything that's on the show.
Oh, exactly. And, you know, one of the last thing I wanted to add to that with this salt, I don't know if everyone knows it, but you should ask your butcher, is the salt being added to the meat? Because a lot of times salt is added to meat because it draws water in, just like we talked with the blood vessel. It's a magnet. So weight can be increased, and that can be increased by 20%. And since meat is sold by the pound, that's 20% more profit for very little cost.
You know what? That's a great question. I'm going to have to, I try to eat grass-fed, organic, all of that stuff, but I, you know, that's a really good point.
Yep.
And actually, I wanted to ask you about that too, just on the subject of meat, because I know that you're a vegetarian, your sister's a vegetarian, your mom, like your family's vegetarian. And I've always tried to, not always, I would say in the last few years, I pride myself on having what I call a plant-based diet.
Yes.
Because I intentionally try to overdo it with my greens. I'm actually drinking, you know, my green smoothie right now, but I really make the bulk of my meals vegetable-based, but I love meat. And so I do throw in bacon even. I have steak, I have chicken, you know, all of those things. And I'm wondering, like, if you are my physician, even though, you know, you're a pediatrician and I'm an adult, but like, what advice might you give to someone who, I mean, what would you advise me? What benefits might I see, if any, by dropping meat or reducing meat in my diet?
Here's the deal. In my book, I talk about your plate should be predominantly plant-based to get health benefits. And as we know, there's a spectrum, right? of people who eat. I know I have patients who couldn't even name a vegetable. I'm not kidding.
I know. Yeah, I believe.
To people who are on a raw vegan diet. So there's a wide spectrum. And I honestly believe if your plate is predominantly plant-based, that you will be healthy. Now, I agree with you. You should ask your butcher about certain things. Is it organic grass-fed? Is the seafood wild caught?
Mm-hmm.
You know, things like that. Are the foods being injected with this sodium? So I think those are questions you should definitely ask. One of the things that kind of convinced me is that if you look at, I don't know if you've heard of Blue Zones.
They're blue. Yes.
Yes.
I grew up near Loma Linda.
Yes. Yes. So, you know, with the Seventh-day Adventist, you know, they're predominantly vegetarian and they typically live on average almost a decade longer than their other American counterparts. And then, like I said, most of them are vegetarian. And then there's blue zones like in Okinawa, Japan, certain places in Italy who prescribe to a predominantly plant-based diet. Like in Italy, it's more of a Mediterranean diet, which are olive oils, your omega-rich fish, your nuts, your seeds, your whole grains, but very little red meat and very little dairy. So those individuals typically have longevity as compared to the regular American standard diet.
Yeah, I mean, and you're right. So fun fact about me, I've talked about before that I grew up in a Christian private school. The Christian private school I grew up in was Seventh-day Adventist. It was SDA. Yeah. So I went to an SDA high school and college. And so I'm very familiar. And so my college was La Sierra University, which is the undergrad to Loma Linda University. Loma Linda is one of those blue zones. And so very familiar with the concepts that you're talking about. But for some reason, even throughout high school and college, like our cafeteria, everything was vegetarian. And I would have to go off campus to go find my meat. And I would. Because of that experience, though, I did grow up appreciating and valuing health because it is a major component of the religion. And so even though I left religion, I kept that value. But for me, it's one of those hard ones. Like, you know how some people have a sweet tooth and at the end of a hard day, they want a cookie or a cake or ice cream. I want to fry some chicken. I want a hot link. And I need to work on that. That's my Achilles heel, if you will. But, you know, on the subject of the sweet stuff, can you talk a little bit about the sugar? Because sugar is the other major, you know, I don't know what the word is, culprit, I guess, for our lack of health and it being hidden in everything, which is why I try to make my own sauces and things like that. And I'll let you go. Can you talk a little bit about sugar?
Yes, sugar is another one of those things that are problematic in our society. 80% of the over 600,000 grocery items have added sugar. That's pretty astounding. And it's just not sweet things. It's savory tasting things, such as sauces, soups, protein bars, yogurt.
Salad dressing.
Yes. So there's a lot of other foods that you wouldn't necessarily think are high in sugar, but they are. Now, the average woman should get no more than 6 teaspoons of sugar a day, which is 24 grams of sugar. And the average man should get no more than 9 teaspoons or 36 grams of sugar. Now, to put that in perspective, one can of Coke is 39 grams of sugar. That's your daily allotment for one can. We haven't spoken about that second or third can or breakfast, lunch, or dinner. So that in itself is concerning. Now, sugar, not only does it can weaken your immune system, it can obviously mess with your teeth, cause premature aging, set you up for obesity, diabetes, and heart disease, and increase cancer risk and depression. So there's a laundry list of things that sugar can, how it can be negatively impact your health. Now, they've also done MRIs on people who are addicted to sugar, and it's remarkably similar to people addicted to cocaine. So, and like I said, you have to be really cognizant when you look at the food label, because it may not just say sugar. It may say fructose, glucose, galactose, sucrose, sucralose, maltodextrin. There's a laundry list of other names for sugar that sugar companies will put on there. You think you may not know that's another name for sugar. So you have to be aware of the deceptive marketing and the labeling. That's very important. And realize that the average American in a year period can get anywhere upwards to 140 pounds of sugar a year. And we know that weakens the immune system. So during this pandemic, that's the last thing we need, because we don't have a cure for COVID or a vaccine yet. So we need to be doing everything we can to bolster our immune system. Yeah, I'm just saying it. So we need to make sure that we really decrease our consumption of sugar.
Thank you, Dr. Trina. I mean, I wanted to get around to asking you, and I want to be respectful of your time. We only have a few minutes left. But, you know, one of the things that we're starting to, it's kind of been around for a while, but people are asking, you know, where are the doctors advising on strengthening our immune system? It's everything. We have all the precautions out there besides, you know, here's the medical, you know, recommendation on how to help mitigate the spread of COVID through you taking care of yourself. Where is that right now? We're just not hearing it. It might be, and I'm not in the right circles or channels, but where is that advice?
You know what? It's interesting. I, as a physician, you know, I subscribe to certain journals and also holistic journals, and I've been reading it on my own. I have yet to see it in the CDC's manual. That's not to say it's not there. That's a huge website that I haven't seen, but that doesn't mean it's not there. Here's my thing. What weakens your immune system? Poor sleep, stress, poor diet, lack of exercise, obviously smoking, drinking, and other chronic diseases. So what things can we control? We can stop smoking and we can stop drinking excessively. Especially, I said, if you're going to drink, at least drink red wine because it has resveratrol in there, which is a potent antioxidant. Okay. But make sure you drink that definitely in moderation. We need to make sure we go to bed at the same time every night so you have some consistency. Sleeping in a cool, dark, quiet room. No caffeine or heavy exercise before bed. And definitely take the phone away from the bedside. You don't need to hear all those notifications going off at night. And don't end your day watching the news in bed. I mean, that's, to me, it's so much negativity in that. So those are some things just to improve your sleep. Maybe read, you know, a nice book to help you fall asleep, or take a hot Epsom salts bath. So that's sleep. And then for stress, I mean, everyone's under a lot of stress. No one's immune right now. So meditation, prayer, comedy, or making yourself laugh or smile intentionally, that will induce your endorphins, your happy hormones. So that's vitally important. And I tell you, my best meditation app I love, is called the Insight Timer. That's Insight. The reason I like it is because it has a gong sound on music instrument. And the gong sound goes off every 12 to 15 seconds, or you can set the interval. So what I do, it helps put me in a hypnotic trance and get ready to meditate. Because sometimes you can sit there and have 1,000 things going on your mind. What you got to do today? What you got to do tonight, tomorrow? No. As soon as I hear that gong, it's almost like that. I don't know if you remember in high school, they had in biology, they had Pavlov's law with those dogs. So it's the same. When I hear that gong, I know I'm ready to focus and to get in my zone. And so on the first gong, I inhale and I inhale positivity, health, happiness, peace of mind, good things. And then I exhale on the next gong and I exhale fear, anxiety, worry, stress, doubt. So it's an actual physical exhalation of negativity. And I find I do that for 5 to 10 minutes. And I find that to be very helpful for stress. And we talked about exercise a little earlier. And I guess on diet, I could just touch upon a little bit. We know we got to have a predominantly plant-based diet because plant-based foods have phytochemicals. Phytochemicals is that potent fuel. I always tell my patients, your body's like an army. You have billions of cells. Each one of those cells are soldiers in your army, fighting to keep you well, fighting to keep you free of disease and COVID and infection. But you cannot feed it poor fuel. You have got to feed it powerful ammunition that can do the job. And that powerful ammunition are phytochemicals, antioxidants in fruits, vegetables, and whole grains. And the deeper the color, the more potent. You want to make sure you get a variety of fruits and vegetables. And not just, I have patients say, oh yeah, I eat only oranges. But you're missing out on all the other things. So make sure it's a wide variety and you have a plethora of different types of fruits and vegetables, because they have different antioxidants and phytochemicals that help with different issues.
I think we need to get you in front of a news camera or something, because you're giving out the advice. Seriously, you're giving out the advice that everyone is waiting for, right? Like, we want to be proactive about fighting all of this. Everything that's been recommended so far is very reactive, right? And so, I love the fact that you said, you know, laughter in terms of managing your stress. I mean, if more doctors prescribed laughter, you know, how great would this world be? I mean, what kind of society would we be living in? It'd be awesome.
It would be.
I agree with you about the meditation app. I use Insight Timer twice a day. I love that app. I use it at night. I do the guided meditations. For some reason, I like to fall asleep.
Yes.
I do a guided meditation, someone telling me how to like a progressive relaxation of my muscles, or lots of different options there. And then in the morning when I meditate, I like exactly what you said. I have the gong sound and just ohms. And I spend, you know, 20, 30, sometimes 45 minutes meditating to exactly those bells that you were talking about. And it sets my day. It sets my day.
Yeah, it does. It sets your day.
Yeah. Everything that you just said, everything.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm trying to say, we have a couple minutes left. One of the questions I've always wanted to ask a doctor, I've heard opinions of like fitness people, but I've never asked a doctor. So I'm curious to your opinion on this question. If you only have a choice between unhealthy foods, like let's say you're at an airport and there's just, I mean, you know, there's pretzels and there's like Panda Express, right? Like there's just no options for healthy foods. Is it better to find something unhealthy or to not eat at all?
Well, see, I never put myself in that position because I plan ahead.
I knew you were going to say that. Yeah.
When I go to the airport, we pack a lunch. I never know. And I always have almonds and walnuts in my purse.
Yeah.
That's a healthy snack. Nuts, seeds, edamame. And in my book, I mentioned that mock tuna with the garbanzo beans. That's a quick makeup that I take on the plane, put an ice pack, I'm good to go. Because some airports are worse than others. Some have, I mean, when I go to LAX, they have an actual vegan vegetarian restaurant. I'm like, wow, what a concept. So it just depends on where you are. Typically, you know, if you're, the Southern Belt, you're not going to find much. So I always make it a point to have healthy snacks so I won't go hungry. Now, say if I don't have my healthy snacks. If there's a Panda Express, I will go there and say, can you prepare me some fresh broccoli without all that high sodium salt or MSG or whatever sauce you use? And just give me the plain brown rice with the veggies. So I've requested that before, but they want to give you the pre-made stuff with all the salt and sodium in it. But they have a stir fry right back there. And once again, you have to ask.
So the answer to that question is neither the healthy food nor starve. One,
no, right.
Be prepared.
Be prepared. Plan ahead. Proactive.
Okay. I'm glad that you said that, because that was, yeah, I needed to hear that, I guess. I've heard different advice from fitness people, and there is a difference between fitness and health. And so I wanted to hear an actual doctor's health advice, and I do appreciate that. And this has been so great, but unfortunately, we're out of time. I want to be respectful of your time, and I've got to run. But this has been amazing. It was the conversation I would have been looking forward to having with you. You speak my language. I think you speak to the questions that so many people out there have, and then just haven't had a doctor, you know, friend to go ask. And so I want to make sure folks can get a hold of you to get your book, to maybe reach out and ask questions. So for those listening, how can they find you?
So yes, so my website is www.trinawiggins, that's TrinaWiggins.com. And I'm on Instagram at TrinaWigginsMD. And you can also purchase my book. It's on Amazon. And once again, the title is Kiss, Keep It Short and Simple for a Healthy, Sustainable Lifestyle.
Perfect. Again, so grateful, so excited, so happy that you were able to make it here today. And I know the people who had a chance to listen are going to walk away with a wealth, with a ton of information. So thank you again for visiting the show. It's been amazing.
Well, thank you for having me. I had a great time just sitting back talking with you.
Thank you for listening to The Other 23 Hours podcast. We'd love to hear from you. So please rate, review, and don't forget to subscribe and share. And for more, visit CassandraDelin.com or follow her at CassandraDelin on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.